And what that means is I help people to architect growth by landing planes. A lot of visionaries, thought leaders, entrepreneurs, business owners, project managers, they just like to go to 30,000 feet and then they fly and circle at 30,000 feet. But you do need to land the plane with the idea eventually and then start executing it. And so I help with processes and systems. I work with a lot of people that have a spiritual aspect to what they do, that they don't just like work, but they also want work with a purpose. They want to make an impact in this world. I do believe that we can remove external blocks all we want, but if we then still are up our against our own internal blocks, our mindset, what we really believe in, our traumatized childhoods, if you never get over that, it's going to be very hard for us to be successful because it's a constant battle. And that's what I do, is I help people to figure out what they want, where they want to go, and then help them to architect the plan to get there.
Hi, it's Nigel again. If you are listening to this, that means that you are listening to the old style of the podcast. You may like the old style of having it split into two pieces, but I know some of my listeners didn't. So what I've done, I have created the option for you to be able to listen to everything all in one go. You don't have to wait till next week. You could get it now. At the moment, it's just on Spotify. We'll be coming on Patreon as well. Costs you... Was it £3 plus the VAT, I think it is, over a month. And that means you get the whole thing all in one go. So the other advantage, that'll be coming out on a Sunday. This one, you will notice, have just come out on Monday. Wouldn't make a big difference, really, but there you go. You've got it. You've got that choice. Helps me invest in better equipment and maybe a few other bonus items going forward. So if you can spare, essentially, a cup of coffee, once a month, and you get the benefit of getting it earlier and getting it all together. So pop along to Spotify, have a look in there where it is, and there'll be a little lock sign against one called number 132/133, John Henney, the voice coach. And that's the combined one, and you should be able to click on there, do what Spotify tells you to do to register and put all your payments in. Yeah, that's it. And the only thing, if you have done that and you do it, I don't know if I get details on it yet. It's very new. So send me, ping me a message through whatever medium you can get hold of me, and you'll get a mention on the show. So again, thanks very much, and let you carry on with the show. Cheers now. So I have a number of sponsors, affiliate links, in the way that it's set up, that have kindly allowed me to share their services, really. The first one is Mike Kling, and Mike runs PM, online PM courses, and it is a great resource for getting those fundamentals of project management trained, reasonably priced, and Mike presents it in an accessible and clear manner. You can check out some of his videos on his YouTube channel and kind of give you a view of where they are. But the code for that, if you go to nigelcreaser.com/onlinepmcourses, all one word, lowercase, that'll redirect you to it. There's varying different levels that you can buy. You can buy individual courses, you can buy pathways as well, if you like. And I get a kickback off those. Mike kindly shares me that. So if you do jump on and use it, I hope you find it really useful. I think he has money back guarantees and things like that as well. So there's very limited risk on that. So jump on that, and that again is nigelcreaser.com/onlinepmcourses, and enjoy. Hi, and welcome to the show. Today I'm delighted to have Beate Schelte on. She is a growth architect and a founder of the Women's Code. She creates strategies, designs, process maps, and blueprints for visionaries and leaders who want to maximize their profits and scale their impact. A first-generation immigrant who found herself $135,000 in debt as a single parent. She bootstrapped her passion for photography into a highly successful global business and eventually sold it to Bill Gates in a multi-million dollar deal, which I'm sure we're going to talk about. She's one of 100 top global thought leaders in 2021 by PeopleHub and one of 50 must-follow women entrepreneurs on Huffington Post. She's the author of the number one international award-winning Amazon bestseller, Happy Woman, Happy World. How to Go from Overwhelmed to Awesome, a book that corporate trainer and best-selling author Brian Tracy calls a handbook for every woman who wants health, success, and a fulfilling career. Beatrice, welcome to the show. With a vast array of interesting topics that we can talk about. And I was going to talk about your client list there, but it was going to take ages to do that. So let's get into it. So welcome to the show, and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you so much for having me, Nigel. So again, you know, Beata Shalet here. I'm known as a growth architect. And what that means is I help people to architect growth by landing planes. A lot of visionaries, thought leaders, entrepreneurs, business owners, project managers, they just like to go to 30,000 feet and then they fly and circle at 30,000 feet. But you do need to land the plane with the idea eventually and then start executing it. And so I help with processes and systems. I work with a lot of people that have a spiritual aspect to what they do, that they don't just like work, but they also want work with a purpose. They want to make an impact in this world. I do believe that we can remove external blocks all we want, but if we then still are up against our own internal blocks, our mindset, what we really believe in, our traumatized childhoods, if you never get over that, it's going to be very hard for us to be successful because it's a constant battle. And that's what I do, is I help people to figure out what they want, where they want to go, and then help them to architect the plan to get there.
Brilliant. I'm sure all the listeners will have some, a few of their ears will be pricking up there and thinking about, yeah, how do we, I like that analogy there where you've got the flying at 30,000 feet, but actually landing it. A lot of us have got lots of great, I'm terrible for it. I've got loads of fantastic ideas in my mind, but actually getting around to doing something with them sometimes is a battle. And even when I do, then I go back up into it, the next one and not finish off the other one. Just tell us a little bit about you. Outside of that, where are you? Where are you from? I know, as we said before, that you're a first-generation immigrant. Give us a little bit of background of you rather than you as your business.
Yeah, so I come originally from Germany. I am now holding a dual citizenship, so I'm German-American. And people always say, well, how do you explain that? And I said, well, my country is Germany. That's where I'm from. But my home is Los Angeles. So that's how you kind of combine both of those. I started out as a photographer. I was always in the creative industry. I loved photography. I loved being a creator. I just realized that I wasn't as good as a creator as I wanted to be. And I ended up very quickly understanding that I'm better at the business side of things. So when it had to be stuff organized, produced, I raised my hand and I just loved it. It comes very natural to me. So you say one, I say two, three, four, five. And then it just kind of pops out. But because I come from the creative industry, Nigel, I see a lot of people that have these crazy ideas. I mean, you know, in photography and in fashion, we do see a lot of very, very colorful characters and a lot of people that are non-conforming. And my job many times was to bring them together and then have them produce something. And at the end of a couple of days, then walk away with a final product. And I absolutely loved it. I moved then into Elle magazine in Germany. From there on, I immigrated to the United States, became a artist representative and a photography producer. And what that means is that I would be out in the field producing for clients like Mercedes-Benz and BMW and Wrangler, Levi Strauss, UK companies, some of the catalogs, and German and Denmark. And, you know, I was kind of like the hot producer here in Los Angeles. And I built that business up until you know, about $1 million business, and then a lot of really bad stuff happened over a really, really long period of time. I always say, what happened, what do you hear about happening to other people all happened to me.
No, right. That's not great.
No, no, that is the understatement of the year. Yes. And lots of natural disasters, Nigel's fires, floods, riots, earthquake. September 11th wiped out $500,000 in one day. A lawsuit, a bad employee. I've covered it all.
Jeez. So you've got the thick skin to get through that sort of stuff.
Well, we call it disaster proof. I have also there's also a tsunami in there where I lost, unfortunately, a very, very wonderful person. And then now recently we added the pandemic, and as of last year we even had a hurricane warning here in Los Angeles. So I'm coming to full circle here of disasters that one can experience.
Jeez, that's it's hard to come back with all those sort of things in there, but now having that resilience is something that obviously with all of us have, well, I think this, the pandemic, you mentioned it there, is there's a different level of resilience that everyone's had to kind of develop to succeed through, not just in business, but just in life and trying to get there. That I see it with my kids. I've got two kids who've gone through that. And the closest thing that I had was the sort of Cold War kind of conversations and a bit of worry around that, but nothing on the level of the pandemic. And I wonder, it's that thing, I wonder whether that builds resilience. I assume it does with some people, and other people it causes a gap in that resilience, and it's something that's got to be got over when they're older.
You know,
me as a parent.
That's a really good point. I always say resilience is the audacity to not give up. And when we change our perspective on resilience, Nigel, what happens is that's where the magic happens. So people say, I want to be successful. I want to make hundreds of thousands of pounds or hundreds of thousands of dollars, or I want to be a millionaire. But they don't realize that where they are at, they don't have the skill set, the mindset, the actions. They're not taking the actions that are required to be at that level. I work with a lot of people that are, their net worth is multi-millions of dollars. And what happens is at that level, you have to think and act very differently. And I'm going to give you an example. So I was in a forum that I facilitate. And one of the people in the forum said, I'm looking for an executive assistant, a virtual assistant. And she says, well, I want to get somebody for $3. And I looked at her and I said, did you not just say the volume of contracts that are coming in the door are in excess of $3 million? And she says, yes. I said, why are you hiring somebody that's $3 an hour? Why are you even wasting your time trying to find somebody at the lowest?
Yeah.
Maybe I'm going to do my DJ voice. The lowest. The lowest possible level, in the hopes that you're going to put your time, energy in this to find somebody who's $3 who can perform work at a $20 an hour virtual assistant level. Why? Well, I don't think I should be paying more than that. I said, but you are paying more than that. What's your time worth sifting through resumes of $3 an hour people? I don't pay my VA in the Philippines $3. And that really is the problem a lot of people have, is that they have scarcity and poverty mindset. And then they're wishing that success would be the result of it. Where the mindset has to be a prosperity and an abundance mindset for the rest of it to happen.
Yeah, I can see that. I listened to a couple of podcasts and the different conversations on there, and they're talking about when you've got a especially entrepreneurs, where you're running a business that is and it's former guests on the show as well, Andy and Joel, where they talk about their $2 tasks, their $10 tasks, their $50 tasks, their $1,000 tasks, and if they're spending all their time on those $5 tasks, the $1,000 tasks, which could get done in that time, aren't getting done. And that's how they kind of look at everything. They kind of, how well they do, I don't know, but they look at everything they do. And I think it's something I try to do sometimes and fail quite miserably at times, was, is what that delegation thing is, what you should be delegating, what you should be giving away to someone else.
Yeah, there's an exercise that I do called the real value of your time, where you are looking at some of the things, like if somebody gives you $100 certificate, a gift certificate, and you go to the Apple store, but you have to now wait in line. How long would you wait in line for you to have this $100 be worth it? And if you say, well, I'll be waiting 2 hours to get a $100 gift certificate, then you value your hourly rate at $50. And so there's a couple of examples like this. So this is an exercise I do with my clients. And then they say to me, well, I am worth this much. And then I let them do this, and they say my hourly is $400, and then it shows up that their hourly is $75. Because they'll be waiting for 4 hours for a $100 gift certificate, or they're not paying the extra $100 for a nonstop ticket that'll get them in there 2 hours early. So you have to be very clear on what you value, time or money. Because ultimately, you and I know that time has a monetary value on it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because it's one of those ones that straight away I've got things pop up in my head there. Where part of the podcast and trying to grow the podcast. And it's a problem I have with myself is I don't have a budget for it. So I don't have a budget. I just try and do it I want to try and bootstrap it is the phrase I wanted to use.
Bootstrap, yeah, exactly, yeah.
I want it to pay for itself. I don't want to be putting my money in to get it done. I put my time in, and that's that. And then hopefully at some point, the idea would be it's going to fund something. I've got a few things in there that are supposed to help, and they don't always help. But then I look at it and I go, well, should I be investing in advertising? Should I be doing a load of Facebook advertising? Or should I do a bit of LinkedIn advertising, or try to use a bit of TikTok, all these different things? And it's kind of, then I look at the cash sum that I got to put in, and I kind of think, is it worth it for what I think I'm going to get out of it? And some of that's about confidence about what the product is. And is it that I think that if I invest in it, I wonder to myself whether I believe in this product, because I'm not willing to take that risk because I don't believe in it. Sometimes it's just a case of, am I just being prudent and bloody minded because I want it to bootstrap itself and I want it to feed itself. And I wonder how many people you work with in that. It'll be the same in not just entrepreneurs, but also with people doing in their job, investing in training and investing their time in getting better at what you do at the job. How do you see that kind of thing, that kind of mindset when it's kind of stuck there?
Yeah.
Right or wrong?
Well,
I'm on consultancy here, then. Free consultancy.
So the example that I give, Nigel, is imagine that you go for a walk in the spring. And now you see this beautiful oak tree. It's an oak tree like no other oak tree. And the oak tree says, Nigel, listen up, buddy. This whole stress with putting all these leaves out all at once in spring is too stressful for me. So here's what I'm going to do is I'm just going to take 100 leaves. I'm just going to start 100 leaves. If the birds come and appreciate the leaves, people stand underneath and they admire my 100 leaves. And if the squirrel comes and plays, then I'm going to do a cautious rollout over the next couple of weeks. Said no oak tree ever. So the answer to your question that you didn't ask is if a concept doesn't exist in nature, then it can't work. If there's no concept that's called wait and see in nature, it's spring. Everybody knows what they need to do in spring. The birds are having babies. The bees are buzzing. There's a limited amount of time available. Everybody's out there doing their thing. And here we are and we go, is this the right time? Should I be doing this? I wonder, I wonder, I wonder. There's a law, a spiritual law that's called the law of polarity. And the law of polarity says that you can only see white because black exists. Otherwise, how would you know? You can only recognize beauty because the opposite exists. You can only recognize good because bad exists. Now, that means if you can see your success, then it can only exist because the lack of success exists. So if you're in lack of success, then you're just missing the opposite. So it's already there.
Yeah.
And I think when you explain to people that there is an actual universal law that's responsible for these things, then it makes it very different and difficult. Or have you ever seen a squirrel that goes, global warming, there's not going to be any more winters. I'm not going to stress myself out over a bunch of nuts. Who knows how many I need anyway? I meant to lose some weight. No squirrel said that ever. I mean, it is fall, boom, they're out in the summer, they're taking the nuts, they're hiding it. Their full expectation is there will be a winter and I will need it. Only us, as the human with a brain, we go, there is global warming. The squirrel has a point. Maybe, you know, if I run a spreadsheet on that and I manage that project properly, you know, maybe the squirrel needs to just do like 25% less in effort because it's, you know, not as cold as, yeah, makes perfect sense. Seriously, people? So that's how I answer these questions on, you can't believe everything you think. If you've been given the idea and you can envision your success, then it must be possible. Because you're living the opposite of that, but you have the vision, so it must be possible. So you're in whatever black, so white must exist. So then the question isn't, does it exist? The question is, how do I get there?
Yeah.
And what are the actions I need to take?
Yeah, I get that. It's a good way of looking at it. It's kind of, it's a possibility. It's one of the options that we've got. And therefore, if it's an option, then what? Yeah, understanding what the steps are to do. It's like you talk about the plane, isn't it? If you're flying around in the plane and you've got to land it, well, you know you can land it. It's just the steps that need to be taken in order to land that plane.
Yeah, and the steps are always the same in order.
Mm-hmm.
You got to know where you're flying to. You got to know what the requirements are for the airport. You know that you have to reduce your speed and your height in, you know, the certain criteria. If you can't see, you need to use your instruments. You need to be subject matter expertise. So you have the mindset, I know I can land this plane because I have the training. The action set, I've taken all the actions to become a pilot. So I'm fully proficient in doing this. I have the skill set, you know, I'm a pilot. I know how to land this plane. And then the rest becomes like, well, I landed the plane. Of course I landed the plane. That was the whole plan in the first place. It's only us in some of these other things where you know, in your case, you say, well, I want to do a podcast. Well, you're doing a podcast. Well, I want to grow the podcast. Well, then grow it. How are you going to grow it? Well, I'm going to think about on whether or not I should do something different than what I'm doing right now. Well, what are you doing right now? Not much. Is it growing? No. Well, then the answer is, what are you going to change to get a different result?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I listened to a different show the other day, and it was about, and I think one of the quotes, and sometimes it gets attributed to Einstein, but as they said, everyone's getting it, every quote gets attributed to Einstein at the moment, was along the lines of, if you keep on doing what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always got. And it's just madness to think that by doing the same thing,
Yeah, the quote is insanity is the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. Yes.
Yeah. And I don't know if it is. It is that situation where you go, but it's hard to do. It's uncomfortable where I am.
Well, that's the mindset, you know. So this is the part of the mindset piece where your mind says, Beate, Nigel, but look, where you are at least you know. You're managing. It's okay. It's not bad. It's not great. It's good. Why don't you just stay where you are? At least we know. Because if you were to do something different, there's a probability it won't work. Well, there's a probability it will work.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you started as a child with this childlike curiosity, you said, one day I'm going to be a pilot, a firefighter, I'm going to make something out of myself. And then you changed your mind like 60 times until it became what you became. But you became something. So it worked. So yeah. it worked. And you, and there was nobody there. It's not like your mom said when you were 7 years old, Nigel, you wanted to be a firefighter. What's this pilot nonsense all of a sudden? Or the following year, oh, now you want to be a doctor? Oh, really? What? Jesus, I'm so confused with you. Says nobody ever. No, it's okay to say something, to pursue something, and then to change your mind, because it's a path. The second step only shows up after the first step. But unless you make a decision to move forward, what's ever going to happen? Nothing.
No, you're right. And it is a case of, it is something I've always looked at, is from a point of view of, I remember when I started, I was looking at being working on a stock exchange, then talking to someone when I was leaving, we were going to college actually, and one guy was going to study accountancy, and I said, what the heck are you doing that for? It's boring. And I was doing business studies, which I obviously hadn't clicked to me that there was accounting in that. And then I moved on to being an accountant for 10 years. And from that, moved on to project management, and then moving into, still in project management, but loads of different types of things. And it's just like, it's quite, I always talk to my daughters about the fact what they're going to do. They talk about what they're going to do. And I say, don't worry. I don't know what I want to be yet. And I'm 55 nearly. And at some point I'll decide what I want to be, but I'll find what I want to be. And they may drop on what they want to do at 20 and be their passion for the rest of their life. I may stay as a project manager until I stop doing stuff. But I might find different passions at different ways. I'm always open to that point of view, being ready to go, actually, that's the thing that is me and I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that change, that the thing, I think there's a lot of us do that, and I've done it before, is that there's a fear. And it's that, I don't know if you're aware of a guy called Stephen Peters, who wrote the book, The Chimp Paradox, which is talking about our inner chimp, our inner self.
The monkey mind, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And about the fact that you've got that monkey mind that's always sitting there going, oh, you don't want to do that. They only care about two things, safety and pleasure. So that's where you kind of, everything that you try to do, if it isn't giving you immediate pleasure, and if it isn't, and it isn't making you feel threatened, then it's happy. But anything else outside of that, it isn't. And many of these things are fall into those comfort zones, those stretches out, and we ignore it, and we ignore that inner voice, and just carry on with it. But some of them are just too, they're too ingrained, and it's got too much support for the rest of your brain to say, well, you might be right, actually, that chimp of yours, because there's all this evidence where you failed before in that environment. And you kind of go, okay, so I've got all that evidence from my computer, he talks about it, and that gets fed by the chimp and by the gremlins that are in there, as he describes, that just are full programming because you've heard it said to you, you've thought it yourself. And just because you think it, just because you hear it, your brain doesn't distinguish whether it is or isn't. It just files it under that matches that. And it does that pattern matching and replays it. And you've still got to have that hind brain or that bit of whatever they call your brain to be able to go there and go, hang on a minute, you lot, stop. You lot are feeding me this. Let's reason about this. And all of us, I think, get stuck in that situation where we don't, that skeptic view of our own thoughts. And I've seen it the same with deliveries of projects and things like that. It's kind of like you sit there going, well, that'll never work. We always do it this way. We've got to do that. Now, I'm in situations where when you get the agile community where we're looking at doing things in an agile manner, there's quite a lot of nervousness about, for me and from others, of not having that predictability of what's going to happen and when it's going to happen. And when you get that feeds that uncertainty, and that uncertainty makes it harder for anyone to accept those situations. So they only do it halfway. And I really struggle about doing it. It's worse than not doing stuff sometimes. And I wonder whether from in a personal growth and from a business thing is where someone they don't go all in, but they don't ignore it. Because what do you, how do you see that sort of, it's like it's coming down with a plane and not putting down your landing gear. Yeah, it's kind of, it ain't gonna work.
Yeah, you know, it's like this thing to say that I want to find my life partner, and I want to find a life partner that is has all these different qualities, and then you never leave the house, or you don't respond to any of the online ads that you're putting out, or you never even put one out. You don't leave, you say, I want to find a life partner. You never leave your house. You never run an ad. I can tell you what the result of that's going to be: zero. Because you can't multiply zero with zero. Or how about you say, I'm going to drive to see my parents this weekend. But you never leave the house. You never get into the car. Or you get into a car and you never start it. So the problem people have is that they've trained themselves to not keep their own word to themselves. It is a lack of commitment to yourself. And it is so common. So when someone says to me, I will call you tomorrow. My expectation is you will call me tomorrow. Otherwise, say, I'll call you in the next couple of weeks or until I call you again. But if you say to me, I'll call you next week, and you don't call me next week, you are training yourself. Like, I don't care if you call me or not, but you train yourself that your word cannot be trusted. So now, if you say, I'm going to make $1 million, your brain goes, yeah, like you called this person 50 times next week. You're worth, your word is useless.
Yeah, it's
So
pattern
people,
matching, isn't it?
it's unbelievable. It's like, I mean, in project management, it's a deadline. A deadline's a deadline. You commit to the deadline. Everybody commits to the deadline. Otherwise, not a deadline. Otherwise, it's a wishful thinking. So if you can't commit to the deadline, why can you not commit to all these other things? So is it different to say we get this project done in a month versus I'm going to find three ways to advertise my podcast, just to stay with the example, that are low cost or for free in the next month? And then because you said it and you commit to it, now the action is I'm going to have to look for it. So now you Google promoting my podcast. Now you see that there's a bunch of Reddit strings and a bunch of Facebook groups, and that some of these groups are allowing you to promote your podcast once a week in one string, not all the time, but once a week. Well, that would qualify. Now you kept your word. The problem is when you train yourself to not keep your word to yourself, that's when you become this like wishful thinking, wishy-washy person. It would be really nice, and nobody believes you anyway. I am my word, and I want to be held accountable to it because I think it's very critical. If I say I'm going to do something, I better be doing it. And if I overcommit myself and I'm learning that I cannot do that because I'm running always out of time, I need to learn on how to commit myself to things I can actually execute on. Because it is better to commit to less and consistently execute versus to overcommit and then not execute, because then you're breaking your word again. And it's not about breaking your word to other people, which has its own consequences. It's worse than you break the word to it yourself. When somebody says, I want to grow my business. Well, what are you going to do? I'm going to think about it. Well, what results do you think that's going to get? Are you not already thinking about this? Okay, well, how long are you going to be thinking about it? Well, I'm going to think about it until I have a solution. What are you going to look for a solution for? Well, it can't cost any money. I don't want to really put too much time and effort in it. It has to be super easy, and it's got to get me there really fast. Seriously? That sounds like a Brother Grimm fairy tale. You're going to have to commit. You're going to have to do the actions. You have to do the learn the skill set that's required, and you're just going to have to do it. That's how you do it. So I think that the question on whether or not I want to, that's what makes it hard. If your kids go to the car and they don't want to be buckled in, that's not an option. So how is it possible that you can do that, but you can't do that? So your kids want to play at the stove with the fire burning? That's not an option. So a no here is an absolute no. So you can say no here, but you can't say no over there. So why is that? What makes that different from that? So you have to catch yourself as you are going into these places and say, am I full of shit here or not?
Yeah.
Because we are the best liars in our own pockets.
Yeah, it's interesting that, because there's a lot of little flags popping up there for me, but that is around where I've committed to myself to do something and there's something else got in the way.
Yeah.
And it's been over different careers and there's things that I've thought about doing and then there's always an excuse not to do them. And when it's, as you say, when it's to yourself, there's only you who it impacts because you haven't told anyone. And I suppose it's habit, isn't it? It's a habit of doing what you say you're going to do. And I there's a character style about it, I think, as well, is that there are certain characters that will, if they say they're going to do it, that's what they're going to do. That's it. End of. Focus. There are certain other characters that don't have that focus and therefore need to have tools to ensure that when they say they're going to do something, they do it. And I'm one of those. I'm always looking for those tools to manage, for me to manage myself better and make sure.
And that's a project manager for you. If you look at yourself as a project and you look at what you do as a project, then you already know what you need to do. I mean, there's no reason you can't be agile with yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think it's something I found, and it's a couple of years ago now with after the pandemic, and I put myself in a position where I made myself ill because of stress, because of trying to take on too much, because of saying, yeah, oh, I'll do that. Oh, right. And I've got that. And then it became busy. And then we had all of the other stuff in there. And my emotional well just filled. And I think that whole thing of, and you feel yourself failing and you feel yourself not achieving those things that you say you're going to do. And I just the way they were talking now, I know part of that problem was at the point where I wasn't doing what I said I was going to do. I said, yeah, I'll get that to you on Tuesday. And then something else had happened and something else had happened. And my focus wasn't in the right place. I wasn't able to stay focused. And then I wouldn't deliver that. And that would add another thing that I was late on that I had struggled with. And my confidence level went down. And even to the point where when I said to my management that I needed to stop what I was doing, I said, look, I'm failing at this. I'm consistently failing to deliver. Now, in their mind, they could see there was a lot going on. They could see that it was very busy and they knew that I was moving it forward. But to me, I felt as if I was failing. And I just wonder whether it is because I could see those little, the lower level things that I wasn't doing when I said, and that's the thing, that build up in the back of my mind of saying,
compound.
Mm-hmm. You've done that again. Oh, you've not done that again. You've not done that again. You've not done that again. And I've felt it since. And spotted it and gone, hang on, I've got too many things going.
Yeah.
Too many plates.
Yes.
And it's right, I need to drop that one. And rather than being forced into failing, I'm choosing not to do. And then if someone sees that as a failure, whatever, it doesn't matter. Because I've said, right, I'm choosing not to do that because I only have this much bandwidth to do this, so much energy, so much focus. And I just think it's something that I think it's really interesting the way that you described it, in that looking at that from this lens and looking back over those 2 or 3 years ago.
You can't even know where it's originated.
Yeah. I can see some of that. And I can see where some of my thinking in recent months is building on that stuff that's still there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a number of different things there where it's building on that. And I've got my brain's now going with, right, what am I going to do different? What am I going to do to change myself, but also change my perception of myself so that it'll be easier to change as well? Because action's going to make it change the most, isn't it? So by that consistency, by doing what you say when you're going to do it, and that's something of certainly in a professional instance, but also in personal relationships. If you say you're going to do something, do it. Now, actually,
you don't have to say to do it. You don't have to commit. You don't have to say, I'm going to see my mom on Sunday if you don't want to. know,
But you can
you know, I had this amazing trip planned to Nepal and Bhutan, and it was ridiculously expensive. And I looked at the date and the time, and I've just been in Costa Rica, and then I went to see my mother in Germany, and I would have, and the trip's already in April. And I looked and I was like, there's just not a chance in hell I can do all of this in my business with all the time that I've been traveling thus far and not get go nuts. So I wanted to do it, and I wanted to commit, but I couldn't commit because I knew I didn't have the capacity. And we tend to avoid things that are painful. So we don't want to have these difficult conversations. We don't want to talk to people that are where we have a problem. We just always love to be in that high flying. Everything is great. Yeah, sure, I'll help you. I'll get that done. I'll help you move. Hell no, I'm not helping you move. I can't even lift a box, with my neck. I know I'm gonna get hurt. So that honesty to say not now, or that sounds like a great idea, but I don't have the capacity or availability for this right now.
And I think it is that thing of where you can put yourself, say, you can commit to helping people, you can commit to do something. And rather than just failing at it, when you recognize that there is a problem to it, go to yourself, well, yeah, I've made a priority call on this. This is a higher priority than that. I've made that priority call. Sorry, I can't help you now. Things have changed. I can't do that now. Now, ideally, when you've committed, depending on what it is, it's different, isn't it? But, and if you're doing that on every single thing, well, that's, again, that's not ideal. But it is a case of, it's that conscious decision rather than the unconscious decision to choose not to do something rather than just fail to do something. And it makes a difference, doesn't it?
It's like project management. If you take a project on and then you don't complete it, you're going to get fired. So a lot is at stake here. So if you can commit to a project, why can you not commit to other things that you say? What makes that different? I think that's the standard that we want to hold ourselves to. It's like the stuff that we don't stick to is just not that important then. So, well, then if it's not important, why are you committing to it?
That's it. And I've had things like that where I've gone, actually, I'm not going to do that anymore.
We all do that. We all do that. Yeah, I'm gonna come, mom, and I'm gonna stay with you for a week. There's not a chance in hell I can stay with my mother for a week. I can barely tolerate her for a day. And that has a lot to do with my past history with her and who she is and the stories she makes up and my abuse. But I had to come to the point where I said that there's just I am going to give what I can give without compromising or depleting or burning up myself. So I can come and see you, but I can only come and see you for a couple hours at a time because afterward I am spent, emotionally spent. There's no reason that I need to allow you to be an energy vampire because I'm in charge of how much I want to give and how much I don't.
And that's it. And in all different situations and different relationships, you have a certain amount of energy that you're willing to put into it.
And why are you feeling bad about it?
You have to choose. It's your choice. It's your priorities. It's your life.
It's your life, and if somebody doesn't suit you anymore and you become very successful and suddenly these people are talking smack about you, let them go. Nobody says that you have to be friends with everybody forever and ever and ever. There's no rule, no law. I mean, even though the UK is like America, there's got to be a law for everything. But thank God that law doesn't exist yet. It's like Jesus.
I know. And the thing is that life's like that, isn't it? You've got to be in a situation where people have got to that kind of you've got to choose people that lift you up. There are situations where you will be in that situation where there are some people you will be involved with, but you, as you say, you put those limits on. There'll be some people, whether it's in the workplace, in the office, or whether it's even media and social media and tools and things like that, where you're I've for a number of times just not I turn people off so that I don't see them, because every time I see them on the Facebook, I'm like, I really don't need that. And you're making me dislike you more and more and more. And I don't need that. The person from my people from my history, that they're fine face to face. They seem to be different on Facebook. And it kind of like think, well, there's no point. What am I getting from it? Nothing except for resentment of that person and not liking them anymore. So I'll just switch it off. And you kind of got to remove yourself and filter that stuff, haven't you?
The snooze for 30 day is such a great feature, isn't it?
What's that? Sorry.
Oh, on Facebook, you can go and snooze them for 30 days.
Oh, right. No, I don't bother with that. I tell a lie. I have done. But I've
often. Especially when people get so political, Nigel.
Yeah. And those are the sort of things that I get into. It's kind of, when it becomes unpleasant and things like that, you think, yeah, I don't need that. And if there's a thing going on, if usually with that sort of stuff, I can find it quite amusing, but some people get a little bit too far.
Yeah, I see it on LinkedIn now. So now they're trying to infiltrate LinkedIn with all this political stuff. And it's like, please, can we just have one platform where we don't have to listen to this perpetual nonsense and just focus on business?
Yeah, I know. And I think it's interesting. It's, as you say, LinkedIn has been, it's an interesting thing. It does, because it's like a public house. It's like a bar of any sort. It becomes the people who are there, and that's what it is. That's the culture. It's the same as any culture in a business. It's a summation of the people that are there. And I think there is a little bit of difficulty, isn't it, with social media. I think the LinkedIn side of it, there is a different group of people that are going to be on there compared to a normal social media.
Yeah, they're supposedly professionals, but I will tell you, people do such stupid stuff. Yeah. I always say, if you post something on LinkedIn, you better be prepared that you're willing to completely ruin your reputation over one post.
Mm-hmm.
And it's out there in perpetuity for all colleagues, for all partners, for all clients, for all prospects to see what you're really thinking.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm okay with that on X, because it's just become intolerable. I think for the first time since inception of Twitter, I've actually thought about deleting my accounts. It's literally intolerable, the content.
It's on, for me, I've not used it. I pop on there once every 2 or 3 months and scroll through 5 minutes.
It's revolting.
No, I just switch it off. It's just...
It's literally revolting.
It's
That's
just
how
not,
bad. Yeah,
just,
it's just not.
And it's not even... There's a few voices in there, but and it's one of those ones where you kind of go, right, the culling of it and managing of it and removal of stuff that you don't want to see, it's just so much energy. I think I can't be bothered with it. So, yeah, I think LinkedIn, it tends to be my social media. Hope you enjoyed that. But you're thinking, ooh, I wonder what the next bit's going to be. Yeah, it's frustrating, isn't it? You heard at the beginning of the show where I said there's a way around that. So if you're really itching and you want to hear the next bit of this show, jump down to Patreon, have a look, find the one that's got a little lock on it, click on it, and you'll be able to get the second half along with the first half all together. And you won't get this annoying bit or the annoying bit at the beginning that I just done as well. So, yeah. Give it a go. It's only a price of a coffee. Cheers. Another great sponsor of the show, it comes in the form of Air Manual. Air Manual is it's a tool for documenting process, which and best practices. It's a company formed by one of my interviewees, Alexis Kingsbury. And I kind of summarised why my view of where we see documentation and my experience has been, people will document something, a process, they'll put it in a Visio diagram that gets loaded onto a SharePoint site or something similar, and then a bunch of that. So then once that diagram's been shared with senior management, they're happy they have a process in the business. But then the detailed procedures underneath it might be in Word documents, in just poorly kept and not linked easily and not updated. And what Air Manual does, it allows you to put in it's a tool for doing this kind of thing. You whack it in, the service in there, get in there, put in your process, your flow, and you build it down to as low a level of detail, even to the point of checklists where people can check off they've done it. So it creates that guided checklists, easy to create, easy to maintain, and all in one place. And no one's kind of rooting around to find the SharePoint, and then when you change to new SharePoint services and all that stuff, it's all there. So if you pop along to nigelpreisser.com/airmanual, there's a bit more detail there and a link there to click on to go and get, I think they offer a trial and things like that. So it's something that I think can easily reduce the amount of errors, rework, etc. within our organisation. So yeah, take a look. My latest, the latest affiliate that I've got on the show now is Riverside. I use Riverside to do my interviews, Riverside FM. it kind of offers you a whole, if you like, micro studio management producer tooling and goes beyond that. Has a really good free layer. And I've been using it for a while now. I find it really good. When I've had issues, even though I'm not on one of the higher paid levels, the support has been quick, responsive, and of high quality, and people keen to help me. The organisation seems really good. The product seems really intuitive, and quality is really good as well. And it's a clever way of doing it is when you're recording through your browsers, so you've not got loads of desktop resources being used compared to some other products that I've used. And what they also do is they do they stream a lower quality version of it up onto as you're doing the interview, so you're not burning bandwidth while you're doing the interview and potentially impacting on the quality of the conversation. And then at the end, it uploads it, the higher quality from your browser. I mean, it's just a really good way of doing it. So. If you are thinking of doing a podcast, know someone's doing a podcast, I would recommend using this tool. I found it really good. Best of the tools that I've tried using to date. And you can get that at nigelcreisser.com/riverside, and that will redirect you to my kickback page on their site, and there I will get a little kickback from them. So take a look. Thanks. So this is my final wrap-up. Every week you're going to hear this, you're going to get bored of it, but you can always click next podcast if so. If you have enjoyed it, if you listen to this podcast to the end of this show and you think, that was great, I'd love to be able to help Nige out, there are loads of ways you can do it. The first and obvious way is to share the podcast. Send it out to people. If you know colleagues and friends who'd benefit from it, you think they'd enjoy it, just send them the link. Grab one of the links, or send them to www.nigelcreisser.com/podcasts. That's www.nigelcreisser.com/podcasts, and that'll push them over to a Linktree link, and it's got all of the different ways they can consume the podcast. If you are feeling generous and have a big bag of cash, you could grab a copy of one of my books. Obviously, they're available in all the usual places, and print and digital. Again, jump on the website, www.nigelcreisser.com/shop, and that will give you a list of all the different ways that you can contribute and grab copies of the book. Also got links to all my guests' books on there as well, where I get a little bit of a kickback from them. If you are of a sporting mind, I have a number through doing some of my judo and running antics. I've managed to secure a few
affiliate links and affiliates there as well. So in there somewhere in the sponsors page, there's links to those as well. So clicking onto those and grabbing if you're looking to get super fit, then that would be fabulous as well, and I get a little kickback from those. I have a Patreon account. It's patreon.com/sundaylunchpm. So again, you can ping something in there, buy me a coffee or whatever. And finally, obviously the most important is coming back, listen again, because the more of you that come back, the more visibility I get, because there's more times that it's downloaded and all the SEO works and things like that. So yeah, that's it. So if you can help me out, I would be much appreciated. If you can't, don't worry about it. Thank you very much. Cheers now. Bye. Well, it's goodbye from me, Nigel Creaser, and it's goodbye from him, the Sunday Lunch PM. Goodbye.